Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I hope by now you've had a chance to check out my other show, SEC Country Live. I do it at 3 p.m. each and every Monday through Thursday on the SEC Country Facebook page with former Alabama All-American Mike Johnson. It's a lot of fun to do. I hope it's fun to watch. It's a lot of fun to do. And one of the reasons why it's fun to do is because there's an element of unpredictability about the show. You know, you never really know the twists and turns the conversation is going to take, because so much of what we discuss is driven by what people pop into the comment section. For those of you that watch Dog Nation Daily on Facebook Live, you kind of have an idea how that works. People put the comments in, and the show kind of takes a different direction sometimes based on the response to those comments. Yesterday on SEC Country Live was an example of that being true, because someone kind of dropped the comment in the comment section, or a question, I guess it was, who do you think is going to have the best offense in the SEC East? And if you just sort of isolate the conversation to just the division that Georgia's in, I think the conversation gets kind of interesting. Could Georgia have the best offense in the SEC East? Well, it probably could. I don't know that it's guaranteed that it will. I don't even know that Georgia would be favored to have the best offense in the SEC East, but it obviously could have the best offense in the division. But in order for that to happen, as you know, we've covered this is well-traveled ground by now, in order for Georgia to have the best offense in the SEC East, then Georgia needs a big season from Jacob Eason. I've made that point in various forms a lot over the course of the offseason. But today I kind of want to focus on something slightly different. Obviously, we know that for Georgia's offense to excel at the level that its potential would suggest it can, Georgia needs Jacob Eason. But today I kind of want to focus in on some things that Jacob Eason needs. Because, listen, while Jacob Eason has, you know, a lot of pressure on his shoulders to live up to the hype of being a former five-star quarterback coming out of high school, Gatorade Player of the Year, and certainly that pressure is well documented, there are some elements in which Jacob Eason needs some help from his coaches and his teammates. There are some elements in which other people in the Georgia program need to provide some assistance to Eason in kind of getting the offense where it needs to go. And really, I think you can kind of characterize and categorize this in really like three areas. I think there are three things that Jacob Eason probably needs if he wants to get Georgia's offense where it possibly could go. And frankly, if Jacob Eason wants to achieve the highest level of success for himself, and I think this year that could probably be defined as being an all-SEC quarterback, which I think is a possibility for Eason. And if he wants to get there, then here's what he needs in terms of help from the rest of the Georgia program. The first thing on that list is obviously the offensive line. And this is one area in which I see Georgia fans in the comment section, both at the forum at forum.dognation.com and here on Facebook Live, and in the comment section we post the podcast at dognation.com. They're talking about this all the time. Obviously, the Georgia offense is only going to go as far as the offensive line takes it. Obviously, Jacob Eason's individual progress is only going to advance up to the point where the offensive line kind of allows that to happen in terms of how much protection it gives Eason. I don't know there's a whole lot else that kind of needs to be said about that right now. That's just obviously true. So if you don't mind, I want to move on to item number two on the list. And here's the one thing that I think gets the angst up of Georgia fans a lot, especially looking back on the 2016 season. In order for Jacob Eason to become an all-SEC quarterback, and in doing so, lead the Georgia offense to the top of the division, maybe even the top of the SEC, well, obviously Jacob Eason needs a better game plan than he was given last year by offensive coordinator Jim Chaney. And listen, it's not a new thing necessarily for podcast hosts or video hosts to, you know, criticize coaches, especially the offensive play calling. That's not necessarily a new thing. And being critical of Jim Chaney is certainly not a new thing for Georgia fans. But what is worth pointing out here in terms of how it relates to Eason in 2017, even Jim Chaney himself admits that he did not get it done as Georgia's offensive coordinator last year. In fact, he said so himself before the Liberty Bowl game against TCU when he had a chance to speak to the media, reflecting back on the season that was. Well, he knew it came up short. Here's what he said then.
I think that I'd be telling not the truth if I was a little disappointed in our production throughout the fall. That as a play caller and as a coordinator, that burden lies with me, and it always has, always will, and I carry that with me every day of my life as a play caller. You feel obligated to those kids to put them in better positions to score more points, and obviously that's my job to do that. So five of the times this year we didn't get that done. There's been a lot of reflection from my part throughout the season, and particularly after the season, and in bowl preparation of what we could have done better, what we should have done better, and that'll continue through the off season when Coach Smart and I get a chance to sit down and visit even more about the direction of what we want to do. And
Will Chaney be better this upcoming season? Obviously, I don't know. And this is where the conversation about Jim Chaney and how he could impact Jacob Eason in 2017 becomes a little bit frustrating, frankly. You've heard it said in courtrooms sometimes. You have he said, she said situations. One guy has one take on how things went down. Another party in the discussion sees things completely different. Which of those two points of view is more correct? Well, sometimes you don't know, and that kind of leads to a stalemate in the court of law. I think in the court of public opinion for Georgia this offseason, you have something kind of similar taking shape and unfolding. You have some Georgia fans who say, because Chaney was bad last year, he's destined to also be bad this year. You have other pockets of Georgia fans who will say, hey, Chaney may have been bad last year, but leave open the door of possibility that he's better this season. It's sort of a he said, or a he said, she said, depending on the gender of the person speaking, one way or another. Another, though, that sort of difference of opinion can't be ultimately decided and rendered who was right and who was wrong until we actually see Chaney and his game plan on the field here in 2017. Which brings me to point number three. The third thing that Jacob Eason needs this season if he wants to be in contention for an all-SEC season and if he wants to lead the Georgia offense to more success here this upcoming year. We talked about the offensive line. We just talked about Jim Chaney. And the third thing I think you have to add here is that Jacob Eason needs more play from his wide receivers. And this is probably the element of this entire discussion that we don't talk enough about. It's not uncommon to go to a message board and see a lot of Georgia fans kind of railing on what Chaney didn't do well last year. And certainly a lot of Georgia fans sort of expressing some anxiety about if the offensive line's going to be better this season. But in this discussion, sometimes I think the wide receiver position and its role in upgrading the Georgia offense, I think it can at times get overlooked here a little bit. But if you listen to Kirby Smart and some of the things that he said, I think he really views the wide receiver position as potentially the key to the Georgia offense. In fact, take a listen to this quote from Kirby Smart. Now, what he's going to be talking about is how much Jacob Eason has grown as a quarterback. But in terms of talking about Eason's growth, he couples it with the play of the wide receivers and admits that the play of the wide receivers needs to get a lot better. Take a listen. I think this is kind of an interesting window into Kirby Smart's mind.
He's got a long way to go, but he's come a long way because he understands the protection now, which last year, you know, there's times that he did, times that he didn't, and there's a lot on his plate. I mean, to manage that offense is challenging coming straight in from high school. I think he's in a better place. He's more confident. He's throwing the ball good, and, you know, the wideouts are catching it. I still think we got a ways to go at wideout to get where we need to go, but Jacob helps those guys out, putting the ball in tight spots.
Yeah, he helps those guys out. He puts the ball into tight spots. At least that's what he needs to do more of. Certainly we didn't see him do that enough in 2016, but you hope that he's doing more of that. And I think it's interesting that as Kirby Smart talks about Jacob Eason getting better, he talks about it in terms of how the wide receivers also need to get better to help him out a little bit as well. The only problem here is that when you think about that wide receiver group for Georgia, at least based on what we saw in 2016, there is no true clear leader. There were bright spots at times from individual players, and high expectations growing for some of the players coming back for 2017, but no obvious pecking order currently in place. In fact, this spring, Kirby Smart was asked, is your wide receiver group going to be the kind of group that has to get it done by committee? Sometimes that's a negative phrase for college football fans, but Kirby Smart did admit, yeah, by committee, that may be the way this thing works out. Take a listen.
I would project it's going to be by committee, but it's all speculation because I don't know what these three kids that are going to come in are going to do. Certainly hope they can provide some depth. But I think that you got to be careful because is Charlie Warner better than your fourth receiver? Is Sony or Brian Herrien better than your third receiver? So there's a lot of things we're doing out there that we're trying to get the best football players on the field. We've got to improve as a receiver group, starting with the toughness, and we hope we improve that through recruiting because some of those kids we signed got some stature to them. But we've got to be able to play better at that position, be more productive, and so that's one of the positions that we'll be watching closely.
I like that phrase there at the end. That's one of the positions we'll be watching closely. I don't think that's a throwaway line. I think that's what Kirby Smart will be doing this summer when practice begins, and I think that's something that Georgia fans ought to be doing as well, watching that group closely to see as a group if it's improving from where it was a year ago and if a true leader, a true top target is emerging, potentially replacement for what Isaiah McKenzie gave the Georgia offense last season. And the good news here is there's an obvious candidate to potentially be able to do that because if you also listen to what Kirby Smart said back in the spring, while he sort of takes the tact of, hey, this may be a unit that gets it done by committee. There's also one name who certainly earned some praise, and that was Terry Godwin, a guy who probably is going to stand on the same spot in the field that Isaiah McKenzie stood on a lot last year. And maybe the numbers could be similar as well. Kirby Smart did admit there's a lot to like about what Godwin did for Georgia this spring.
I'll tell you, man, when you look at practice, Terry Godwin, it's like night and day to me to watch that kid. And I was, you know, very honest last year about Terry playing tougher, playing bigger. I mean, the guy is blocking hard. He's competing. He's taking more reps. He's such a better leader. I mean, to see him grow up, it means the world to me because I've seen that kid since his ninth grade year. And he's a vital piece of that slot. He and Jacob got great, I guess, intuitive instincts. I mean, they got great intuition of where each other's going to be.
So here's the bottom line for me. You know, I was reading this NFL blog the other day, and it was talking about Jameis Winston, the Florida State quarterback, and Winston had some accuracy issues last season, which obviously will remind some Georgia fans of what Jacob Eason went through in 2016 at the college level. And what this writer said about Winston at Tampa Bay was the way they're going to measure his accuracy going forward is, does he put the ball in a spot where receivers can catch it and run with it? That for the Bucs, the yards after catch were going to become one of the ways of measuring how accurate Winston was with his throw, because if he throws it in a place where they catch it in stride, they'll be able to take off and run. I think that's an interesting measuring stick for Jacob Eason at Georgia, too. Putting the ball in the hand of receivers and letting them take off and run with it and get some extra yards. And obviously, Terry Godwin, who you just heard Kirby Smart talking about, there's a great candidate to do just that. But the bottom line for me, though, is this, that as much as Georgia needs Jacob Eason to make the offense better, Jacob Eason also needs some things for Georgia. I think he can be an all-SEC quarterback if he gets some help from his wide receivers, if he gets a more productive game plan from Jim Chaney, obviously if the offensive line does its part to protect Eason and the quarterback position, then the Georgia offense this season, well, it may just be just fine. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us on the radio, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, Facebook Live every morning at 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook page. Of course, in podcast form as well, iTunes, SoundCloud. We post the show at dognation.com, pretty much wherever podcasts are found. You can find Dog Nation Daily, and, well, however you find us, just thanks for finding us, and thanks for making us a part of your off-season routine here as we get ready for some Georgia football coming up this fall. Of course, one of the things this fall that we are most excited about is our Dog Nation Invasion to South Bend, the big one in September. You can go to dognation.com right now, and you can click in for your chance to win a spot and be a part of our Dog Nation Invasion to September. Not just the bus that will be taken from Chicago to South Bend, although that's a part of it. You also have a chance to win tickets, airfare, lodging, basically the whole nine yards. For it is going to be a trip of a lifetime for fans. It's the Dog Nation Invasion to South Bend. You can find it right there at the banner at the top of the page at dognation.com. I'll also tell you, now just 136 days away from Georgia, Florida, later on in the fall, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville this October. We believe that good Georgia fans are Gator haters first and foremost. That's why we wear our Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirts. You can check them out at shopdognation.com. Dog Nation Daily logo in the sleeve, the Gator Hater insignia license plate in the front, all the sizes there for you. It's all restocked at shopdognation.com. We'll also give you free shipping on that. Hope you'll check those out at shopdognation.com. It's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, and hope you enjoy Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
I will say hello to a Jeff Sintel here after what has been a frantic 48, 72 hours for Georgia in terms of recruiting, both in terms of players it did get, a player that it didn't get, some players that it still hopes to get. Jeff, you promised us a busy month of June, and I would say so far you are a man of your word. It is certainly unfolding that way for Georgia, is it not?
Yeah, man, Brandon, no doubt about that, man. I would say, I was thinking about some, you know, earlier this week, over the weekend, about what all I want to write about this week. And I think one of the main things that comes to my mind is how the narrative has changed for the 2018 class, basically in about maybe two weeks, over the last 2 to 3 weeks. You start adding ingredients like the potential of a Justin Fields, a five-star lightning rod quarterback, and then Zamir White later in the month. Two five-stars. I still think the prospects for Georgia are really strong. with a Jamari Sawyer. That counts up to 3 5-stars. And all of a sudden you start putting those 5-stars in the class with other guys that are already there, that are on their way, that are trending that way. And, you know, suddenly the 10, 11, 12 maybe final hypothetical or projected rating for Georgia's class now falls more in line around 4, 5, or 6 just because of all the pieces they could add. And I tell you what, this is the same time of year like last year where it just seems like the Georgia's recruiters on staff feel like it doesn't matter how many 45s that one wants to put on the bar. I think those coaches think that they can lift it and they can handle it and they can go get it. And, you know, they're looking for a lot of guys and they're feeling good about a lot of guys. And I think the main thing is this sort of thing is going to really galvanize the fan base as well and get them really excited during the doldrums of summer as we head towards that Appalachian State opener.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Jeff. And let me talk to you about one of the guys that Georgia did get. Owen Condon commits to the Dogs over the weekend. And you can certainly speak to him on a more expert level than I can. But just based on what I have learned about him here recently is, the thing that I like about him probably best is, you know, if you look at a lot of the recent Georgia offensive linemen, you've had to put some guys at tackle, but from sort of a physical standpoint, they probably sort of identified more as guards. In the case of Condon, you know, big, tall guy, you know, he's carrying that 300-pound frame right now before he even gets into college, where I'm sure he'll put on even more weight. This guy is obviously an offensive tackle. Now, I don't know that he's obviously going to be a good one. There's really no guarantee of that until you actually go through college and play. But there's no denying that Condon has the build of a tackle, and that really is an upgrade from where Georgia's offensive line has kind of been in the past, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Brandon, and the funny thing is that Owen is about 6'6.5", and I think his dad is still probably right around 6'8", 6'9", so he's still not the tallest member of his family. And so all those people that are fans of genetics and bone structure, you know, that everybody's kind of marveling about the, you know, Daniel Falele guy in IMG Academy who's already 6'8", pretty close to 6'9". Well, you know, Condon could also get there. And I think the biggest thing that I'm excited about, that the fans should be excited about with Owen Condon, is it's not the fact that his mother is an alum. It's not the fact that his he shut down his recruiting or all the great things he continues to say about Sam Pittman. I think the thing for me, and he does look like an understudy or the guy after the Max Ray for this class. They wanted a big, long, rangy tackle with, you know, hands that are about 10 3/4. But here's the big thing for me, Brandon, with Owen. The big thing for me is I kind of look at student athletes at any school and the tremendous grind it will take to be an effective multi-year starter. And I think of their time in college as like a pie chart. And I think about the main thing with Owen is he's extremely smart. He's just 1B away from a perfect 4.0. at a pretty rigorous high school in Oklahoma City. And what I'm trying to say here is that he's going to be able to handle his education at the Terry College of Business, and it's not going to take him a whole lot of that pie chart of his time to be a great and an exemplary student at Georgia. So, you know, and then the football crazy guys, I know that's definitely putting the football before the books here, but he's a guy that's going to have more time in college to work on his game, to watch film, for treatment, for rehab, for just getting better and perfecting his craft, all that stuff. He's just going to be an all-around, well-rounded student to where the intense amount of time that these guys have to spend towards football is not going to overwhelm him because he's going to be able to handle himself in the classroom very well.
Thought that the most disappointing aspect of the Master Teague decision, you had some great quotes from Teague at DogNation.com, you know, finding out that had the Ohio State offer not come in, then Teague's probably a Georgia Bulldog right now. You know, it's one thing if it was a whole host of, you know, potential answers and he decided Ohio State from a choice, of a multiple choice. But in this case, it really sounds like that Georgia had won out. Ohio State made the offer, and obviously Teague felt like that was something he couldn't say no to. That kind of makes the sting of losing Teague, I think, probably a little more intense for a lot of Georgia fans.
Well, you're going to think think about it a couple of ways. Number one, Georgia was way in on a back and offered and heavy on a back that eventually chooses Ohio State. I think Master Teague said it well and said it best when he told me that any way you want to look at it, Ohio State is still a more developed program with more winning right now and more tradition and more success than the Bulldogs currently have. I mean, Kirby Smart and everybody on Dog Nation wants to see Georgia reach that Ohio State plateau, but definitely not there yet. You could bring up Vanderbilt, Nicholls State, Louisiana, Lafayette. You could bring up, you know, the Georgia Tech games. They're just not there yet in year one. And then the main thing for Master, though, for me, is that he told me, and I've heard this for a while now, that Ohio State had kind of always been his dream school, and that was the school which led for him even when he didn't have an offer. I remember when Master Teague sent out his top 12, he had a top 8, which are the schools that he had offers from, and then he had a top 4, which were schools that had yet to offer him. And he had Ohio State there, he had Alabama there. So it was clear that he really liked Ohio State. And I just think, you know, the Teague decision, you know, we went into it a little bit with his video and when it was filmed, and it looks like, you know, if you look through the edges of the video, I put some screenshots up yesterday where it looks like he has a Georgia Power G with a Nike swoosh on at the early scene of the video. And then he stands up at the end, and there's a clean white T-shirt with an Ohio State symbol. The Nike swoosh has disappeared. You know, I casually joked about that on our message board that some people were combing through that, like the Zapruder film or something like that. In terms of trying to find some CGI video evidence of where the Dogs were at the beginning of the video. And I don't know, I think that's pretty telling where, you know, Georgia's the choice at the beginning and then Ohio State is the choice at the end. I think that is pretty appropriate for the way you want to sum up the Master Teague decision.
Well, I think the other thing, you kind of touched on this, and I think the Georgia fans even have to admit that. Look, I'll be the first to tell you, I think the future for the Georgia program is bright. But you have to acknowledge that when a Buckeyes, you know, program led by Urban Meyer kind of swoops in here at the last minute without really showing the kid a whole lot of love up until that point in time, but they extend the offer and he commits right on the spot. I mean, that does speak to some differences between the two programs right now, which can only be corrected by some high-profile wins by Georgia on the road at Notre Dame, on the road at Auburn, Florida, get to the SEC championship game. And that's the only way you correct that, right?
Exactly. And Brandon, you know, that's the point there to make. And I like to tie in the conversations, because right now everything with Georgia is very fluid and very, very much in terms of a cycle. You know, all those great things we said about five stars and could this guy come to Georgia, the ground is set for a lot of those things to happen. And if you look at, you know, there's four pivotal games everyone's talking about, the Notre Dame game, the Tennessee game, the Florida game, and the Auburn game. You know, Georgia needs to win probably three of those four games, and at the worst go 2-2 in order to have the type of year that moves Georgia out of the lane they're currently in, and everybody can see that year two in Kirbyville is getting towards where Urban Meyer's at right now.
So the good news about Teague's decision, I would think, has to be that it seems like most of the media, yourself included, now sort of views Zamir White as an even stronger lean to UGA because of the fact that Ohio State even took the commitment from Master Teague. We had Jeremy Birmingham on the show yesterday. He alluded to that. I've read, you know, some stuff like that from you at DogNation.com. Excuse me. So the link between Georgia and White seems to be getting stronger here, right?
Yeah, even Master told me that he doesn't think that Zamir will come to Ohio now. And, you know, Ohio State has two running backs now committed for 2018. That's Teague and that's Brian Snead. And then they got another guy that's more of an all-purpose back, a four-star all-purpose back. So they got three backs of some breed, of some staple, that are committed to Ohio State right now. And I don't think they picked four with Zamir. And I think the offer to Master might have been a concession that they don't think they're going to get Zamir White. You know, everybody can have these theories about silent commitments and everything else, but I don't know if Ohio State offers Teague if they're feeling extremely good about Zamir White and their situation there. I think that would be the ultimate gut punch for Georgia fans. We've talked about gut punches a lot. Maybe I should upgrade that to a haymaker for Georgia fans if if Urban Meyer should basically take a look around and right before the clock expires decide, oh, I'm going to just go pick off the top two running back targets for the University of Georgia because we're Ohio State and he feels his Buckeyes can do that. I know that would be a stunning June 28th for a lot of Georgia fans if they look up on the Ohio State commitment board and see a Zamir and a Master that are on their way to Columbus.
Cleet McAllister in our comment section on Facebook Live says he saw Zamir White recently wearing an Ohio State hat. So I'll ask Cleet's question for you. Is there a last gasp here? You mentioned Ohio State. Cleet's talking about Ohio State a little bit. But I guess he also recently took a visit to North Carolina. Took a visit, was it last weekend, to Alabama? Obviously, Clemson seems to loom for every one of these top prospects in this region right now. Any of those schools that I just mentioned make a last gasp effort towards Zamir White before June 20th?
Well, I think everybody's getting he's going to make the rounds amongst all of his choices. North Carolina was the recent visit. Alabama was a visit. Everybody that's around Columbus is wondering if he'll take a visit. The Buckeyes have a very big camp set I think, June 16th, June 17th, across those 2 days where they're going to look at a lot of guys. And I guess those in Columbus would be hoping that Zamir White will make that trip to Columbus for one more look. It seems like he's just rounding the bases on this decision, and it's coming to a close. And, Brandon, I guess I don't know how most will feel, but you would probably have a good indicator for the nation about what Zamir White would mean to Georgia. I think not only would it be just a five-star, a tremendous talent, but it would actually it would basically be the flag-bearing recruit for Georgia's 2018 class for others to come climb on board.
Yeah, that's true. At the forum, forum.dognation.com, the attention is kind of already turned to who Georgia's other running back in the 2018 class would be, assuming it gets White, now that Teague is heading to Ohio State. And the name James Cook has come up. I mean, Damian Pierce is going to come up a little bit here too, but James Cook has come up, which is a surprise to me. That's Dalvin's brother. Is that a realistic option for Georgia? It seems like Cook is looking around here that Florida State might not be his only college choice, but is Georgia a realistic possibility for Cook?
I think the things with Cook is that Cook sees a loaded backfield at Florida State. They signed two really strong four-star backs last year, two top 10 backs last year in Cam Akers and Kalon Laybourne out of the Virginia Beach area. Now, Cam was the nation's number one back. He was basically this year's Zamir White. If you really put me in a grinder, so to speak, and had me think who's better, Cam or Zamir White, might take me a while of hemming and hawing. But I probably would go with Zamir just because he's a little bit bigger. But there are paper clips of difference in my mind between what those guys can do in terms of their overall value to a high-powered offense in college football. But I think with Cook, the things to think about there is the depth chart, but also he sees great opportunity at Georgia. He's got a great comfort level with the staff, Del McGee, James Coley, Kirby Smart. Sees the blockers that are coming in. Everybody realizes this, Brandon. Nick Chubb and Sony Michel are leaving. It does mean it's wide open for a guy like Zamir. And James Cook's going to be a little bit different than Zamir. James Cook's a guy that has a lot of Sony Michel skills. He also has incredible speed. If you put James Cook, I've seen him plenty of times in elite 7-on-7 competitions, where he's running slot, and he almost seems bored with the linebackers and safeties that are trying to hang with him. He's got a lot of game in terms of receiving, and that's the way where he can get on the field. And, you know, Brandon, if you sense what is happening here, I want you to just paint a clear picture for you and everybody out there. If you think about what could happen with Eason and Fromm and then potentially Fields, and then you go running backs with guys like DeAndre Swift, Brian Herrien, Elijah Holyfield, potentially Zamir White, potentially James Cook. You see a lot of positions, the offensive line, the Torrey Johnson, Justin Schaefer at guard, but they're trying to spackle in a Trey Hill, a Warren Erickson, a Jamari Sawyer behind those guys. It's almost like Georgia has and I guess the only way I can say this is DJ Shockley Insurance. And what I want to bring up there is the crucial game Georgia played last decade where they had to go into Florida. And, you know, the galvanizing force is their big star, DJ Shockley, was injured, and they had to go with a backup. And there was a clear drop-off in talent from the starter to the backup. And what Smart is doing with this roster, it appears to me, is he's wanting to provide Plan B and Plan C insurance policies all up and down the roster, where the fan would see something happen to a starter and the mood in the stadium would not be doom and gloom because, oh, my gosh, that guy's unproven or that guy's nowhere nearly as good or we're going to have to cross our fingers and toes here. What the feeling might be for a lot of Georgia fans is, oh, my gosh, we're going to get to see this guy play? I can't wait to see what he can do. He's been tearing it up on scout team. He's been tearing it up in practices, and I can't wait to see. This other team doesn't know what they're going to get. That's the feeling that Georgia's trying to develop. And tying back our conversation into before, that's what Ohio State has, and that's what Kirby Smart and Georgia wants to get to.
Yeah, that's really a great point, Jeff. I know you've been asked about this a lot. We talked to Chip Towers about this a little bit yesterday, but apparently I guess there are three members of Georgia's 2017 class who haven't kind of gotten all their I's dotted, T's crossed as of yet. Robert Beal, Devontae Wyatt, who we had a great time with at one of our Marlowe's broadcasts back during the time leading up to signing day, and Torrey Johnson, who's also a huge fan favorite for Dog Nation, and another guy we had a good time hanging out with and interviewing at one of our Marlowe's broadcasts. Any reason in your mind to be concerned if you're a Georgia fan about Wyatt, Beal, Johnson not being on campus, not being sort of officially ready to go yet?
Yeah, I bet Chip had an old school answer for that one, didn't he, Brandon?
Did he
kind of him and you know what? I kind of subscribe to the theory here about these are young men, and it's that way too early culture for everything right now where I know a lot of SEC beat writers that didn't even talk about who's not on campus and who's on campus until August because it just drops the inquisitive minds into a person's academic record, their personal privacy. And it used to be not a thing where if you're not on campus in August that you're not late to the party yet. There's no need to send up, you know, warning flares about what's going on with this guy. But now today's culture, Georgia brought so many guys in late May and now the first week of June that anybody that's not on campus, that's not enrolled in attending classes is seen as what's going to happen with him, what's going on there, what's going on there. You know, I try to respect the privacy of a lot of these situations as best I can, but I would say to me that two of the situations seem like there's really nothing there for Georgia fans to worry about. And there might be some flags there with a third situation. And I'm being very cognizant here, Brandon, not to name names and throw guys
Fair
out
enough.
There. But I think Georgia fans, you know, I know everybody wants information. They wanted it yesterday and they want to stop worrying so they can enjoy their steaks on the grill and stick their toes in the sand at the beach. But I just tell everybody to just pump their brakes, let these young men handle their books, and be pleasantly surprised with who's on campus and practicing in August. And you might find out that there wasn't a whole lot to worry about for at least two of these situations.
Let me squeeze in two really quick final questions, Jeff, and you can answer them shortly if you want to. You've certainly been generous with your time today. Georgia lose that on Darnell Jeffries. As you wrote in the forum at forum.dognation.com, Jeffries had visited Georgia a lot, ultimately chose Clemson, though. How big of a loss is not getting this defensive tackle into the fold?
Georgia definitely needs to replenish the D-line, and I think Jeffries is a really good player, a strong player, who will do very well, and he will definitely be a good brick in the wall for Clemson on their defensive line. You know, but Jeffries has kind of been pointed to Clemson for at least, I don't know, since early April, mid-April, that sort of thing. And, you know, Jeffries was no longer really considered, you know, Georgia's to lose. He went from kind of up in the air to leaning towards Clemson to deciding to choose Clemson. He actually just went on a long vacation for about 3 or 4 days. And he had told me that he planned to cut it down after his vacation, but it just appeared after he had his toes in the sand that he was ready to cut it all the way down to a top one. And Jeffries, you know, hails from the same high school as Jeremiah J.J. Holloman. Big kid. I think the stock on him is going to continue to go up. And, you know, Georgia has other guys on, in mind for the defensive line. I hope everybody is paying a lot of attention to Rick Sandage out of North Carolina and the things that his family and his mother have been saying on social media. That guy is skyrocketing up the charts in terms of evaluators with what he did at the Rivals Five-Star Challenge, with what he did at the opening. And that's the guy we've written about on Dog Nation that knows Trey Scott very well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We've actually had a lot of comments in the comment section about Sandage lately, too. A lot of Georgia fans are paying attention to that. And then finally, real quick here, it's like I said, it's been a busy time, but I wanted to get your thoughts on all of this. Tied in Luke Ford, who had been a commitment to Arkansas, he opened that up. I was actually a little surprised to see Georgia in the mix for this, but it sounds like the Dogs are.
Yeah, it's funny. He decommits on June the 10th, and he visits Georgia on June the 11th, and it appears they have all hands on deck to receive him. If you look at his father's Facebook profile, you know, the first visit out of after a decommitment is very interesting. And I think Ford's recruiting was definitely in its infancy. He's a young man out of the state of great state of Illinois that basically, if my information is correct, he visited Arkansas and visited his home state school, the Fighting Illini, and then he shut down his recruiting and committed to. He committed to Arkansas. Well, there's a policy there, I've been told, at Arkansas where they don't like you to take visits to other schools when you're a commitment.
Oh, Lord. Is it this thing again? Are you kidding me, Jeff?
It happens, man. It happens, man. And I think this is a situation where Luke Ford sees Michigan, sees Alabama, sees Georgia, sees all the big boys at the table of college football wanting to offer him a scholarship, wanting to recruit him heavily, wanting to check, you know, basically kick the tires and check the oil on his commitment. And the best way that that's handled in Arkansas, I'm told, is if you want to visit other schools, then you're free to decommit and do so because we will consider you a decommitment. Now, when Luke Ford hangs out at Georgia, he hangs out with all the right people, Jake Beeson, Jacob Eason was there, and Isaac Nauta was there. Those are two – they definitely got the 10-star tour of Stanford Stadium with those two guys. I think Ford is a guy that's going to look around and shop around a lot. A lot of the things I'm hearing are like he's looking for a fit, like maybe an Alabama type fit, maybe a Michigan type fit at tight end. And this kid's about 6'6.5", 240 pounds, nation's number four tight end, and he's a guy that recently came back on the market. You know, Georgia would definitely like to have him because he is the highest-rated tight end that Georgia is pursuing. And that's the spot at tight end where we could talk a lot about in another show because of, you know, the big man John Fitzpatrick at Marist, who's scheduled to visit Georgia tomorrow.
Goedy, the 2019 kid, too?
Yeah, you know, Ryland Goedy is the guy as well in 2019. You know, and let's not forget that Georgia is still pretty well stocked at tight end for at least two more seasons with Charlie Warner and Isaac Nauta and the like. So, like I said, the same conversation we had about quarterback and offensive line and running back, and Georgia just wants to kind of stack up the options where if somebody has a shoulder one week or an ankle one week, then they have risk management recruiting. And what I mean by that is the guy behind it is just waiting to blow down the door and knock down the wall for his chance to show everybody why he was so highly recruited and how talented he is as well.
Well, listen, if I don't be careful here, we're going to be able to cut this thing in half and turn it into two podcasts. We've gone very long here. Let me squeeze in one more point, though, what you're just talking about. I don't mean to go off on a tangent here, but if Arkansas is doing just like Wisconsin did the other day when the kid got the Georgia offer, I hate to, like, you know, go off on my soapbox here, but if you're going to get your feelings hurt because one of your committed players is taking visits other places, then you don't want to play college football at the highest level because that's the way the big boys play. You got commits, but they're going to be, you know, recruited by other players or other schools. And by the way, if your commitments aren't getting recruited by other schools, they're probably not that good.
Yeah, you know what, Brandon, the best thing I can say about this is I was having this conversation with another writer and we were talking about that recently and they were like, oh, there's a school that still does that. If you want to take visits, you better decommit. And he was like, and I said, yeah, that's pretty crazy, I guess. And we kind of arrived at the point that it's kind of like you're dating and you're going out with this young lady and the father lets you know that curfew would be 9:30 p.m. You know, like that still happens today and age in the year 2017. That's a very rigid policy there. And that's just what I've been told, that kind of if he wanted to start looking around, then go ahead and decommit. I think in this situation, he decommits on the 10th and then starts making the visits on the 11th to follow the natural progression there.
Well, as a way to close out the conversation, here's what I think you and I both can agree on. As fathers of daughters, we are very much in favor of rigorous and sort of very strict policies about who dates our daughters, but all is fair when it comes to college football recruiting. Would you agree with me on that?
Oh, Brandon, doublestandard.com Adams, man. There you go again, man. That's the way you think, man. Whatever's good for Georgia, whatever's good for my college football team is what I want to see.
That's probably about right. Hey, Jeff, I really do appreciate your time. Really good stuff. Hope you have a great day. We'll look forward to reading a bunch more from you at dognation.com, too, and check in with you real soon here on Dog Nation Daily as well.
Yes, sir, man. Have yourself a good week.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Time now for our SEC Through. Hope you'll check us out on SEC Country Live, 3 p.m. Eastern Time today. That's every Monday through Thursday. That's Alabama's Mike Johnson, the former Alabama All-American, myself. We'll do it SEC Country Live, 3 p.m. on the SEC Country Facebook page. I'll also remind you, Dog Nation Invasion coming up to South Bend. Don't forget, one of the sponsors that makes it all possible is our friends at U.S. Auto Sales. You know, a lot of car dealerships play games with sticker prices. They hit you with hidden costs. But at U.S. Auto Sales, we pride ourselves on giving our customers no-haggle pricing with no hidden fees. Find out more at usautosales.info. All right, a few stories I want to hit here for a moment. Did you see where the clothing store there in Oxford, Mississippi, I believe it's called Rebel Rags, I think that's the name of it, they are suing Mississippi State because of some allegations of Rebel Rags involvement in the ongoing NCAA investigation of Ole Miss. Now listen, you can go anywhere on the internet and kind of find some sort of a legal analysis of all this, what this means both for Rebel Rags' chances of getting some retribution in court against Mississippi State and what this means for Ole Miss's NCAA investigation. I'm honestly not all that interested in that part of it. I think this court stuff just sort of has a way of kind of dragging on forever. And ultimately, I don't care if you want Ole Miss to go down or if you want Ole Miss to, you know, be saved, whatever you want out of all this. I know a lot of Georgia fans have a lot of bad blood towards Ole Miss. Ultimately, this is going to end like a lot of NCAA investigations end without any kind of real resolution. I mean, the North Carolina thing's been going on forever. In some form or fashion, I think the Ole Miss thing just sort of ends up dragging on forever. So my point in bringing this up is not in that it impedes the progress of the NCAA investigation. My point in bringing this up is another example of just how much Ole Miss and Mississippi State hate each other, to the point that this rivalry is just different than the rest in the SEC. Now, you're probably aware that Mississippi is kind of a small state from a population standpoint anyway, and these two SEC schools share the state. That means, this is just objectively true, that there are fewer Ole Miss and Mississippi State fans than there are other SEC programs. A lot fewer, frankly, in most regards. However, just because they are smaller in number does not mean they lack anything for intensity. And the fact that a clothing store in Oxford is suing the university, or at least the athletic department here, is more example of that. There is nothing like the Egg Bowl right now. Nothing like Ole Miss, Mississippi State. And I don't care who you're a fan of. Obviously, this show, we're Georgia Bulldogs partisans. But no matter who you root for on Saturdays, y'all be watching how this Ole Miss, Mississippi State thing unfolds. These two programs are at each other's throat. Speaking of being at throats, I know that Nick Saban wanted to be at a lot of throats over the satellite camp issue that emerged about a year or so ago and was a huge topic of conversation. He was obviously against it. Saban has a way of kind of arguing in favor of whatever serves his own interests, and I don't fault him for that necessarily. He didn't really view satellite camps as being something that served his interests. I think he's probably right about that. I think that's another reason why Georgia was kind of against that kind of stuff too. But once they kind of became legal and kind of out there in the open, well, you got no choice but to sort of participate in them at that point in time. We saw Smart doing some of this past offseason a year ago. Nick Saban doing that this offseason. I think he was at an event there in South Florida. And listen, I actually don't fight the SEC coaches at all for their stance on this. Yes, I know it seems a little hypocritical that you join in on the satellite camps after you railed against them, but that's just what you got to do. The fact of the matter is, SEC teams ought to protect their turf, because the one thing the SEC has going for it, and I'll also include the Florida States, the Clemsons, those high-tier ACC programs, geography is your biggest advantage. The fact that you play your games in a region of the country where most of the best players play their high school football is your best advantage. And you got to defend, you know, Ohio State and Michigan, these other carpetbaggers from the Big Ten trying to come in here and steal your players. You got to do whatever you can do to defend yourself against that. So I have no problem with Saban kind of railing against the idea of satellite camps. Satellite camps, to the extent you bring out-of-region coaches into the South, is bad for the SEC and bad for the Southern programs. Speaking of top programs outside the SEC in the South, Florida State and Alabama obviously play in week one, and Minka Fitzpatrick, the Alabama defensive back, has said that is Alabama's most important game for this upcoming season. Made that quote to Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports, and I actually agree with Fitzpatrick on this. Even though Alabama obviously plays a lot of important SEC rivalry-type games, I think the Florida State game is not just important for Alabama, I think it's important for the SEC reputation here as well. I think that we'll learn a lot about who Alabama is as a program, kind of where it's heading in the upcoming season, based on how it performs week one. So from that standpoint, I don't think Fitzpatrick is wrong, and we'll make that your SEC through. All right, so as we wrap up here today, you know, we started the show by talking about Georgia's need to have better wide receiver play, if that's going to allow Jacob Eason to get where he wants to go as a player this season. And to that point, ESPN had an interesting article the other day. Edward Ashoff was the writer, looking at the possibilities for 1,000-yard seasons in the SEC. And you can look at the names in the list. It's guys like Christian Kirk from Texas A&M, Calvin Ridley from Alabama, A.J. Brown from Ole Miss on here, Antonio Callaway from Florida. But on and on you go with the names on the list. What you don't see is a Georgia player. And obviously, listen, there have been a lot of years where 600 yards would have led Georgia in receiving. But that's sort of almost like some objective statistical analysis that makes the point we were making to start the show, that really the Georgia wide receiver position probably doesn't get enough attention in terms of one of those spots that greatly needs upgrading this season. We'll see if that happens, and see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.